As subjects, they transferred their loyalty in time, but it was loyalty at a far greater remove. The ready-to-hand stability and authority of a nearby owner-lord overseeing the particulars of life was gone. As a result, each man eventually had to become more or less responsible for himself and for his own. The serf-turned-townsman came to be conceptualized as a tiny king of a tiny kingdom, a miniature of the emerging, larger political paradigm. Where once upon a time the peasant or serf or slave and all around him had been merely dependent, producing parts of a largely self-sustaining mini-economy, now the source of order and authority had to be relocated to some point within daily process. Individualism was born. Cash money, not blood and land, became the basis of power. An entrepreneurial middle class emerged to fill up the space between the largely bankrupt hereditary aristocracy and the abject, unempowered poverty of the peasantry. The nuclear family replaced the tribe or clan as the center of physical organization. And on it went. The processes which began and solidified in the decades surrounding the Great Reformation became our new common illusion, our new shared imagination as Westerners about how the world works and how the elements of human life are to be ordered. Protestantism, when it finally arrived, was both the religious expression and the religious reflection of those processes. It survived and grew to dominance because, as the meaning-bearing part of society, it gave the reconfigurations of the late peri-Reformation their authority by sacramentalizing them during the Reformation. There is, in other words, a very good reason why most general lectures about the Great Reformation today commence with the simplistic but accurate observation that, as a hinge time, it was characterized by the rise of capitalism, of the middle class, of the nation-state, and finally of Protestantism. It is the business of any rummage sale first to remove all of the old treasures that belong to one's